Good Wednesday afternoon, everybody. Happy hump day to you on this Wednesday, August 5th. Happy to be with you in our ESPN studios here in Northern Nevada. We have a lot of games going on right now. We have two happening in the world of the NHL. We have a hat trick of them going on right now in the world of the NBA. Utah and Memphis coming down the stretch here. Just under 2 minutes to play. And Utah up 8 points right now on Memphis. And this would be a tough, tough loss for the Grizzlies after just a string of tough losses since this restart has begun. Talked about that a little bit yesterday, that they need to start getting some wins under their belt as that race for the eighth seed there in the Western Conference continues to get tighter and tighter, it seems, with every single game. And the more Memphis can't get into those winning ways, the more they risk falling out of that eighth or even ninth seed spot there in the Western Conference and go from being a playoff team. Because remember, in that eighth West playoff, if that does happen for Iowa, well, it doesn't look like it's going to happen for the Eastern Conference, although it's not set in stone yet. But if that does happen, then the ninth seed would have to beat the eighth seed twice, whereas the eighth seed just has to beat the ninth seed once. So Memphis could go from being that eighth seed that was in the driver's seat, only having to win one game over the ninth seed if that were the case, to possibly even falling out to 10th place or worse in the West and not being involved in the playoffs or that play-in series at all. So Memphis, we'll see what they can do. They got a minute 38 right now. Their man Valanciunas at the line, and he does make a free throw. So it's now just a 7-point game between the two teams, but Memphis just has not been able to get going, and we talked about that yesterday a little bit, just with them not being able to really put wins together. They have a lot of good talent on this team. Ja Morant, Dylan Brooks, Grayson Allen, even Valanciunas, and just have not been able to really get that winning ways in sync, and it's costing them some precious time right now in the Western Conference. But some of the other games going on around the world of the NBA right now, Philadelphia up on Washington, speaking of the Wizards. Philly leading 47-38 there, just over 3 minutes to go in the second quarter. Then just about 2.5 minutes to go in the second quarter. San Antonio and Denver are playing each other with the Spurs up 2 points, 55-53. So I will keep you up to date on the scores there of those games, as well as the games going down in the NHL as well. Like I said, we have two games going on right now, but one game already went final today. The Panthers stave off elimination, beating the Islanders 3-2, and now New York leads that series 2-1. Coyotes and Predators playing in an important game 3 with that series tied 1-1 as well. In the third period, the Coyotes have a 3-1 lead on Nashville. And at the end of the first period, the Lightning and the Bruins playing a Eastern Conference round-robin seeding game. And Boston's woes continue as Tampa Bay has a 2-0 lead there at the end of the first period. So those are the games active right now in the world of the NBA and NHL. And we also have fun news from the 1868 that came across yesterday, and that was that Francois was named the USL Player of the Week, and very excited to see that, and just have Cristiano Francois representing the team as well as he has. And we got a little press release from there. But midfielder Cristiano Francois, as I said, named USL Championships Player of the Week. He scored twice and assisted in the week's two games. Of course, both wins for Reno as they bounced back after having those first couple games postponed. But Francois is the first player from Reno to be named the Player of the Week and is still the only player to be named the team. Player to be named to the Team of the Week as well. Francois was voted to Team of the Week after scoring and assisting in Reno's season opener. The Haiti product and former Maryland Terrapin is tied for 9th in the USL in goals with 3 and tied for 5th in assists with 2. Both marks lead the team here in Reno. Francois and Reno are back in action this Saturday, hosting the Tacoma Defiance. The club's obviously home opener. The kickoff is set for 7:15 at Greater Nevada Field, but unfortunately, fans will not be allowed in attendance. However, that does not mean you cannot have your own imprint and your own influence on the game this Saturday with Reno 1868 FC's home opener. Being played without fans, there will be a way for fans to have, like I said, your presence felt there at Greater Nevada Field, with 1868 hosting a poster drop-off event going on this Friday. So fan-made posters will be proudly displayed in the areas behind the goals for this Saturday home opener. A quote here from General Manager Doug Raftery, he says, "We are certainly disappointed that we won't be able to host fans in our return to Greater Nevada Field. However, the players and coaches are asking for your support in another way. We would love to have your passion for the club in the stadium on match day, and this is the perfect opportunity to do that," end quote. So fan-made posters can be dropped off between noon and 6 p.m. at Greater Nevada Field Team Shop. Now, at the Greater Nevada Field Team Shop, and will be displayed in the stadium at Saturday's games. All fans dropping off posters will also receive a 15% discount at the team store as well. And signs are recommended to be as large as possible, with 24 by 36 being ideal. Posters obviously containing any abusive or profane language or imagery will not be displayed. That should go without saying, but just in case anyone out there was thinking of doing anything rather iffy, might as well not do it. It'd be a waste of your time, as the poster wouldn't be displayed. And please note that the team shop is currently cashless and capacity inside will be limited. So all fans in attendance are required to wear masks at all times as well. But there you go. If you want to still be involved with Reno 1868's home opener for the season this Saturday, get your poster designed, get it ready, and you can drop it off there at the team store between noon and 6 p.m. this Friday, August 7th. So don't miss out on your chance there to have your own presence and your own unique spirit there in the stadium with the team for this Saturday's games. But let's get back to about the world of the NBA there, because we had some standout games yesterday. I mean, a lot of fun games. That Boston-Miami game was incredibly exciting to watch. And I know that this is going to seem a little biased just because I am a Suns fan, but my gosh, come on. Phoenix rising up again with Devin Booker hitting that buzzer beater. Phoenix beating Washington now and Dallas to kick off their restart now follows that up with a win against the Los Angeles Clippers, 117-115. Booker, of course, with the buzzer beater, also going for 35 points, that turnaround winner over PG-13. And Paul George, man, he is finding himself in some unfortunate situations for being the guy that gets, the game-winning shot hit on him. Booker did it here. Damian Lillard, of course, in that playoff series last year with Portland and Oklahoma City, and the shot from long range and the wave after that was over Paul George as well. So he's finding himself in some unfortunate positions there on the floor in late-game situations. But Los Angeles, that weapon that they had against New Orleans, remember I talked about that 25 three-pointers made by the Clippers in that game against New Orleans. And that's the thing we've seen in this kind of new style, new world of the NBA, that when threes are falling, teams like Houston or Golden State or even the Clippers, when teams like that are heating up and hitting their threes right and left, they become one of the more unstoppable teams in the NBA. But that's also a sword that you can live and die by when it doesn't go down. The Clippers had those 25 three-pointers against New Orleans, but they only managed to hit 8 against Phoenix. Meanwhile, the Suns themselves had 17 three-pointers in that game. So, I mean, that's the thing. If you're going to be a team, or really if you're going to be a league that has most of your teams living or dying by that three-point line, those are the type of days you can suffer. But even if you're the Clippers, you only hit 8 three-pointers. You're missing, Patrick Beverley left early in the first quarter with a calf strain, and you still don't have Montrezl Harrell out there, and you're still only losing by 2 points. And Phoenix has been playing extraordinary basketball since them coming back into this bubble. I mean, they've had, just guys right and left contributing and picking up their play and just becoming better weapons out there on the floor for that Phoenix team. And because you talk about Ricky Rubio adding 18 points for Phoenix in that game against the Clippers, DeAndre Ayton had 19 points as well. So just a lot of good team play there from Phoenix. And, of course, you're going to rely on Devin Booker. He's going to be your star, and he's proven that, time and time again throughout his career there in Phoenix, but also in this restart so far for the Suns. He's just been, I mean, extremely valuable, even more valuable than he usually already is, with just his presence and his control there out there on the floor for Phoenix. But L.A. did get a little bit of a pick-me-up. Lou Williams, you know, fresh out of his quarantining, did manage to put up 7 points, 6 assists, and 6 rebounds in 21 minutes out there on the floor. So, you know, again, you have these pieces kind of coming and going for Los Angeles during this time. Obviously, Montrezl Harrell not being there. But, you know, as Lou Williams come back, now you lose Patrick Beverley for however long. You know, the Clippers did say they're going to be cautious with him moving forward. And that's smart because Beverley is the, you know, take nothing away from any other player on that team, especially guys like Kawhi Leonard, who have had a lot of great, you know, defensive prowess throughout their career. But Patrick Beverley is the defensive spark plug on that team. And, you know, again, with this team kind of missing pieces here and there, you don't feel as though at any point really this season, whether before the restart or since the restart, they've been able to get everybody ready and everyone together and in full gear. When that team is – if that team is able to do that this season – I mean, I know they're only the second seed right now, so it wouldn't be, you know, a huge surprise if they made a run to a championship, but it could be a dominant run if they get all these pieces back and are able to get everybody, you know, with some chemistry and in rhythm and again, out there on the floor together. That would be the key thing for the Clippers. But nonetheless, this is still a team that even missing those few pieces, still very competitive, still one of the better teams in the Western Conference. So while this is a tough loss to suffer if you're the Clippers, I mean, just tip your cap to Devin Booker and look to coming back stronger in your next game. That's really all you can do. And I don't doubt the Clippers, just like they bounced back after that loss to the Lakers, will bounce back nicely after this loss to Phoenix as well. Somebody else bouncing back, Michael Porter Jr. After that blowout 125-105 loss to Miami, of course, the whole, you know, spat up comes to life of Mike Malone kind of calling out Michael Porter Jr. And, you know, Michael Porter Jr. also reached out to his coach after that calling out, saying, you know, hey, don't lose faith in me. Don't lose trust in me. I can still be your guy. And he proved that. You know, the next game against the Thunder that they played a few days ago, we had 37 points and 12 rebounds. And sometimes when you have a young player that's been having an up-and-down season like Michael Porter Jr. has been having, you got to get tough with him. And that's exactly what Mike Malone did. And he got a response. And, I mean, he got really two responses. It wasn't just that, you know, Porter Jr. heard the criticism and just kind of sat there and took it. He heard it. He responded to his coach verbally saying, hey, I understand, but don't lose faith in me. Don't lose trust in me. And then it's one thing to do that. It's another thing to then back that up, get on the court, and perform. And he did that in their game against OKC. And he's going to have a chance to do it as Denver faces San Antonio today. And obviously with, you know, that game going on right now, Denver up by 2 points over San Antonio as they get close to halftime. Right now, Denver leading San Antonio 64-62. Another high-scoring first half. It seems like we've gotten a lot of high-scoring first halves in this restart. But Michael Porter Jr. right now leading the team in scoring for Denver with 14 points. So, again, he's out there just, you know, doing whatever he can. Also leading the team in rebounds with 7 right now. So he's, again, responding to that criticism and showing that he can be the guy. And, you know, good on Mike Malone for doing that as well, for calling out a young player, because you don't want to call him out and wreck his confidence. For a guy that's already having an up-and-down season, you don't want to call him out and make him feel even smaller than he might be feeling. So it's a risky thing for a coach to do, but he got the right response from Michael Porter Jr. And now we can see, like I said, with Jamal Murray day-to-day, Denver could really use Michael Porter Jr. to be more consistent since he'll be there throughout this restart. And, of course, as Denver goes into the playoffs as well. So if he can do that and tighten up a little bit more on the defensive side as well, Denver could be a more dangerous team heading into that playoff. I mean, obviously that team is going through Nikola Jokic right now, but still, if you have somebody in you know, at that guard position that can be there every day and be consistent like Michael Porter Jr. could do, then Denver could be in a very good position to try to be a threat there, be more of a threat there in the Western Conference. And we'll stay in the Western Conference for another little second here, as OKC might have found another secret weapon. Right, in a season where no one was really expecting a lot from the Thunder, I didn't really hear any buzz around them about being a playoff team at the start of the season. You know, Chris Paul just kind of being sent there. You thought it was, you know, going to be a slow death for him really this year, and it has not been that way at all, especially coming out of this restart, because OKC has been raving about that young man named Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, and ever since they returned for the restart, that man has not disappointed at all. He's averaging 21 points per game and shooting 47% from the field and 35% from beyond the arc as well. So OKC, again, looks to have another weapon in a year where they weren't really, you know, earmarked to compete in the Western Conference. But you have Chris Paul leading the way, and you just can't, you know, overstate what kind of positivity that brings to a team. And you have a team leader like Chris Paul that's been to a few different teams in the NBA. He's been on teams that have made, you know, some kind of playoff push. He's had a lot of experience and obviously has that veteran mentality in the NBA. So you have him leading the way for, you know, Steven Adams, Danilo Gallinari, who's having a great year, Dennis Schroeder, who's performing for OKC, and then, of course, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander as well. And OKC is just a half a game back of Utah and Houston for that fourth and fifth place spot. So OKC is right there in the thick of this Western Conference competition, and don't be surprised if they continue just to pick up momentum. You know, I mean, this is a team that, again, really can play with not a whole lot of pressure because not a whole lot's been expected from them. And they'll play the Lakers later on today in a little over an hour at 3:30. That game tips off, you know, on ESPN between the Thunder and the Lakers. But, you know, OKC, again, just looking like a team that's in a good position. If they can figure out, you know, the good rhythm and even, you know, a better rhythm for their offense. It's already pretty good. If they can figure out a better rhythm for that, keep those big guys like Steven Adams down low, dominating down there the way he does, then OKC also. I mean, this Western Conference is just a minefield to try to maneuver your way through. And with OKC obviously having the 110-94 win over the Jazz, then falling to the Thunder 121-113 in overtime, a win and a loss so far in the restart, but they've played really solid basketball there, so it'll be fun to see how OKC continues to develop that. And then looking at the Eastern Conference really quick, one team that must be feeling good about themselves is Brooklyn, because after pulling off that upset of Milwaukee, they now have a very high chance of making that playoffs. Remember, it's not just, you know, if you look at it, you look at where Washington is, you'd think, oh, well, it's over already. But Washington just has to get back within that four-game back window, which time is running out for that. And then the loss, obviously, for the Wizards, you know, losing right now to Philadelphia 54-47, that's not going to help them if they go on to lose that game as well. But Brooklyn, as of right now, even coming into the bubble with a small roster of options and having to manage, you know, to keep pace with Orlando there for the seventh seed and having to hold off Washington, who, like I said, hasn't been doing themselves any favors. But Brooklyn with a win over Washington this past Sunday, then, of course, the shock upset of the Bucks yesterday. The Nets now have a chance greater than 99% to make the playoffs. And if they can pull off this kind of a season without KD and Kyrie out there, the East might belong to a different team next season. Because, again, just like OKC, nothing extraordinary was really expected from Brooklyn throughout this season. Then they go into the restart with a depleted roster, and you think even less is going to come out of them. And here they are competing in the Western Conference and holding on to that eighth seed and really kind of chasing down Orlando for the seventh seed as well. So a pleasant surprise Brooklyn has been, you know, since this restart. I don't know why I went Yoda there all of a sudden, but Brooklyn has been a really pleasant surprise, and if they can continue just to compete, you never know what can happen in sports. So Brooklyn feeling good right now, coming off that massive upset that was such a great chance to make the playoffs, and they rested some guys too in that Milwaukee game. So they have potential, and they have some more star power as well. I don't know if I'd call it star power, but they have a lot of potential on that team to possibly be a you know, difficult out in the playoffs when those get going. So it's an interesting landscape right now in the NBA, especially in the Western Conference. That fight for the eighth seed just seems like it's ever changing, especially now that the Grizzlies have lost another game in this restart. Utah beats Memphis 124-115 to push Memphis even further into that Western Conference shuffle. So we'll have to see how all that plays out. But like I said, three games still to tip off for the NBA, with Thunders and Lakers at 3:30, Raptors and Magic at 5, the Nets and Celtics at 6 o'clock. But we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk some NHL here on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM.
Is your technology infrastructure meeting the demands of your customers, your employees, you? How does your network scale to support your growth plans? With distribution hiding behind every corner, it's time you benefited from a network and security provider that will guide your organization through rapid technology change. Blackfoot, here to enable what's next. Visit blackfoot.com/SDWAN to learn more.
We had the first team in the NHL playoffs, the qualifier round anyway, punch their ticket through to, I guess we can call it the first round, or I guess the round of 16 is maybe the better way to phrase it this year. But Carolina sweeps the New York Rangers and moves on. Again, I just don't know what to call. I guess this is the qualifier round, so I'm just gonna call the round of 16 the first round, just to keep things a little more by the book here. But Carolina sweeps the Rangers off to the official first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs there. And I was surprised that Carolina was able to sweep the Rangers. I thought New York was in a good spot before the pause. It looked like they were really picking up some momentum, some good goalie play. But Carolina just came out and really kind of tapped into that energy they were able to find last year as they were making that initial push through the Eastern Conference. And this is a series that Carolina relied on their top line, and that top line dominated. They are responsible for 8 of the 11 goals scored by the Hurricanes, and really capped off by a great goalkeeping performance as well from Peter Mrazek in the first two games, then by James Reimer last night, who made some great, I mean, both Carolina goalies, and really the New York Rangers goal, because the New York Rangers finally got to see their young guy as well, Igor Shesterkin, back in action. And although the Rangers didn't get the win, again, Igor, just like James Reimer, made some eye-popping saves in that game. And, you know, really, the Rangers were just off kilter in both aspects. Their offense really did not get anything going. You know, it relies on kind of that throw through Mika Zibanejad, and that just wasn't there. And their defense provided no cushion for goaltending at all. So while it's not a surprise that Carolina won this series, I am surprised and a little disappointed that the Rangers weren't able to get one win under their belt. The fact that Carolina really just blew through them is, again, not overly surprising, but it's more disappointing on the Rangers side of things than I think it is surprising on the Carolina Hurricanes side of things. But nonetheless, Carolina, the first team to punch their ticket to that first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs, and did so really in fashion or in style with the sweep of the New York Rangers. And that was actually, you know, the Panthers. We'll talk about that now, because Florida survived. I was thinking about New York, and for some reason I went right from the Rangers to the Islanders. Didn't really even think about how I was transitioning there. But nonetheless, Florida and the New York Islanders played Game 3 today, and Florida was able to fight another day as they stuck with Sergei Bobrovsky in goal. He made 20 saves in the win earlier today versus the Islanders. And also the Panthers were lifted to a 3-2 victory after Mike Hoffman and big old Brian Boyle scored goals 2 minutes and 7 seconds apart there to start the third period. And even though the Islanders were able to get a 6-on-5 goal right around 90 seconds remaining there in the third period, Florida able to hold off and force a game 4 against the New York Islanders. So we do not see another ticket punched. But this has been a series that, you know, I think Florida has kind of slowly evolved over those first three games, kind of getting back into it, and they were finally able to put some good stuff together during this third game. Again, Sergei Bobrovsky in goal, doing what he can back there, making 20 saves, but just to see a little more flow through that offense, to see Brian Boyle get back into it, Mike Hoffman, of course, providing the pick-me-up that he does. So Florida able to fight another day there against the New York Islanders and force a game 4, possibly. You know, if they can get another win under their belt, force a sudden death game 5 there in the Eastern Conference. Then a series that does not have a game today, but in my opinion is becoming the series to watch here in this opening qualifying round, and that is Calgary and Winnipeg. Really all three games have been defined by moments. You know what I mean? There was a controversial moment in game 1, which Calgary won with the injury to Mark Scheifele. there with the skate to the back of the leg. And then, you know, Winnipeg thinking that without Patrick Laine that they were going to pretty much be sitting ducks there in game two, fought back and was able to make it a 1-1 series tie there in game two. And then we get to game three, and it had just a ton of highlight moments. I mean, a lot of hits, a lot of goals. And I mean, I'm hoping this series goes to all five games. I'm bummed we can't watch this for possibly seven games, because these two teams just, I mean, they're Canadian teams, they're Western Conference teams, but they're usually in separate divisions. Calgary in the Pacific Division, Winnipeg in the Central Division. So we don't always get to see those teams matched up there in the playoffs. So to see these two have this kind of a series right now is really, like I said, it's becoming the series to watch from my perspective here in this first round. And game three, like I said, a lot of hits, a lot of goals. Connor Hellebuyck as well didn't have his sharpest game. But he did say that, you know, after the game, he was going to use this game as fuel for the rest of the series. And I don't have the exact quote in front of me, but something along the lines of that Calgary is going to have to scratch and claw for everything they get for the remainder of this series, whether that is just the fourth game or whether it goes to all five. We will find out. But Calgary did have a very explosive game three with six goals over Connor Hellebuyck there in goal for Winnipeg and Calgary. Most of that coming in the second and third period. It was a 1-1 battle there after one. The first 10 minutes of that second period had a ton of scoring with Calgary getting two and then Winnipeg getting a power play goal of their own to cut it to a 3-2 deficit. But then Matthew Tkachuk again getting a goal there towards the or just over the halfway point of the second period to make it 4-2. And then a power play goal and a Johnny Gaudreau goal in the third period wrapped it up for Calgary. But a fun series between these two. Calgary also went 3-for-4 on power plays last night. And Cam Talbot also a strong performance from Calgary, making 33 saves in that game against Winnipeg. So this is definitely a series that is going to, I feel like, get more and more personal over the next game or even two games. I'm not sure how that's really possible when you can have just a five-game series, maybe a four-game series, but the way these three games have gone and just with the, because was it that game last night that had the both teams kind of standing on the ice afterwards? It may have been. I don't know for sure. But there was a hockey game last night watching it. Both teams after the final buzzer blew just kind of stood there on the ice with all four referees, the two referees and the two linemen, separating them and keeping everybody apart. But this series between Calgary and Winnipeg is, in my opinion, one of the most must-watch series of this first round, and can't wait to see how Game 4 plays out. I'm hoping we get a Game 5, but Game 4 of this series will be tomorrow at 7:30. It'll be the final game to kick off tomorrow on the slate of five games. But that series is becoming more and more exciting to watch every single time I get the chance. But also tonight, so like I said, some games going on right now in the world of the NHL. Two games have gone final. Talked about Florida and the New York Islanders, but the Arizona Coyotes have beaten the Nashville Predators 4-1. So Arizona taking a big 2-1 lead there in that series over Nashville. But the Avalanche and Stars also play later today, again in that Western Conference round robin, seeing Dallas looking to bounce back from allowing Vegas those four goals in their third period of that game, and Colorado looking to build on a gritty win over St. Louis. But the other two games tonight could be where more drama happens. We have two major game threes going down tonight. Pittsburgh and Montreal, that puck drops at 5 o'clock. The Pens bouncing back in game two after that bit of a shock game one defeat. And what's better for Pittsburgh, Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin looked more focused in Game 2. I would imagine they're looking to build on that and take a 2-1 series lead. But they definitely looked like there was more of a purpose there in Game 2 to each movement that happened. And if Pittsburgh can stay healthy and stay rested, and possibly, you know, if they can take a 2-1 series lead tonight, get that game 4 victory and get out of that series with Montreal and not have to worry about possibly playing a sudden death game 5. And anything can happen when it's winner take all in a final game, whether it's game 5, game 7, whatever it might be. So if you're Pittsburgh, you get that win tonight, try to get that win in game 4, keep yourself rested and keep yourself ready to go into that first official round of 16 there for the Stanley Cup playoffs. So that could be an interesting development there. But Pittsburgh and Montreal playing tonight at 5 o'clock. And the other big-time game 3 tonight, Chicago and Edmonton, which if you're not necessarily feeling the Calgary and Winnipeg series, Chicago and Edmonton could be your series to watch here for the remainder of this first round. Because, again, this has been a series that neither team has really been able to boast about the defense they've been playing in the first two games. But if you love offense and, you love some physicality, this could be a series for you to enjoy. And like I said, I don't see the goals being scored, the pace of which they're being scored, and the physicality, I don't see that changing anytime soon for this series. So if you're the Oilers, I mean, just keep feeding Connor McDavid and hope that he can continue rolling the way he is. And then try to see if you can get Leon Draisaitl back in that regular season form as well. Hasn't been necessarily the goal-scoring contributor there for Edmonton here in the start of this restart so far. But, if they can get Draisaitl back into that regular season form and keep feeding Connor McDavid, then Edmonton could absolutely end up running the tables here against Chicago. But the Blackhawks have shown they are no pushover, which, I mean, even if they struggled throughout the regular season like they did this year, with the history they have, with the players they have, you still could never really comprehend them being a pushover in any kind of series that has playoff implications on the line. But Chicago holding their own, and we will get to see who takes the lead in that series as well with the pivotal game 3, puck dropping at 7:30 p.m. for that game. So that is where the world of the NHL kind of stands right now as we tick under about 4.5 minutes to go here in the second period. Tampa Bay still with a 2-0 lead over Boston, although it does seem as though the Bruins spending some good amount of time in the Tampa Bay zone during this period. As I say that, though, they turn it over, and Tampa Bay now on the break. But there's a turnover for them as well. So back and forth action there between Tampa Bay and Boston. But we're going to take a break when we come back. Pac-12. Big Ten, fighting for change. We'll talk about that on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM.
Is your technology infrastructure meeting the demands of your customers, your employees, you? How does your network scale to support your growth plans? With distribution hiding behind every corner, it's time you benefited from a network and security provider that will guide your organization through rapid technology change. Blackfoot, here to enable what's next. Visit blackfoot.com/SDWAN to learn more.
Well, college athletes in the Pac-12 spoke up a few days ago and had a letter that was put out in the Players Tribune. It was there was a group of players that wrote a letter to the conference, and in that letter there was a piece in the Players Tribune titled "We Are United" that got asking for precautions amid the pandemic and all this other stuff. And before I get into that, which I will. Pac-12 players writing this letter threatening to opt out of practice in the season if these demands weren't met regarding health and safety protocols, as well as support on economic and racial issues, which, with all of this progression, with all, the NBA athletes getting to put the messages of social, justice on the back of their jerseys. The NFL has talked about, putting social justice decals on helmets for this season. This is a great thing for college sports to be going through right now. And it wasn't going to be something I don't think that the NCAA acted on its own. I think they've had plenty of time to do that, and they just haven't shown that they will take those steps. So hats off to these Pac-12 players just right out of the gate for taking a chance like this, really, and for stepping up and speaking out. And not just for, being able to stand up for racial issues, but also for economic issues, for making sure that they're taken care of as well. Because players are essentially asking for, safety precautions amid the pandemic, which, again, if you're the NCAA, hello, you canceled your spring sports because of the pandemic. What have you been doing since then? Have you not been talking about safety precautions to take? I talked about this with the NFL. It's one thing to be strong in your stance to want to play. It's another thing to be ignorant and make people play without any kind of plan in place. And if there have been any kind of talks about, you know, safety precautions or the health and safety system, it obviously hasn't been talked about enough or talked about in enough detail because, you know, Pac-12 players, that's all part of their demands, is to have safety precautions in place because of this pandemic. And if those haven't already been talked about, what the F? What the literal F? It just doesn't make sense to me. If you're the NCAA, you're approaching fall sports. After you canceled your spring sports, conversation should have started. All right, what do we think about fall? We can, you know, if you want to, you could wait a month or two to see how it played out. By the time you got to May, at the latest, there should have been talks about what the safety and health protocols are going to be as sports start or try to come back at that time. Now, you know, they've had some time to look at some of these leagues that have come back and played. So to have players within a week of now, when I'm talking to you, still having issues about safety precautions because of this pandemic, that's just on an inexcusable level for the NCAA. So, I mean, that makes sense to have that as part of these demands. Another part of it. The Pac-12 players, you know, asking for medical insurance for 6 years after their eligibility ends. And you think about all the money that these football and basketball programs bring in and how it's all distributed, you would imagine there is an opportunity for that to be a part of this new system that Pac-12 players are fighting for. Because you do have players that when their eligibility ends, they're still feeling some of the repercussions from those college sports they played and from their college career. They're kind of just on their own now to figure it out. And for these players that aren't getting paid yet anyway to play for these schools, there needs to be some kind of help for them. Not all these players are going to go on to play professionally and have money in the bank account. Not all of them are going to go on to be a doctor or a lawyer or whatever and make all this money, or even a freaking social media influencer or whatever they do nowadays. You know? So I think for them to be able to have that backup and have that support for 6 years after their eligibility ends, again, is a way that a school can help an athlete that help bring them money. They can then help make sure and ensure that they are in a good place, you know, in terms of how they feel physically or mentally moving forward in the next stage of their life. So I think that is something that, again, I totally agree with them asking. A permanent civic engagement task force to address social justice issues. And I think, again, all of this seems really well thought out. And so for them to, again, be asking for help on social justice issues, because we've had, you know, the reports of Iowa coming out and, you know, black players, they are not feeling like they could be themselves. I believe Texas Tech's name just came up for abuse there of players. So it just seems as though this isn't an issue outside of sports. This isn't just an issue where players, you know, are going to wear messages on the back of their jerseys. There needs to be something done. If the collegiate level can maybe put that in some kind of you know, example and show, hey, other leagues, this is how you can do it, I'm all for it again. And I think college players, again, for players that give so much to these schools and to these programs, they should not feel like they are muzzled in any way. They should not feel as though they cannot be themselves. They should not feel as though they cannot speak out on issues that mean something to them. So if they've, you know, if these schools or if the Pac-12 isn't okay with a player doing that on their own, why not have a task force that can guide students and guide schools through some of these issues and help them take a stance? Again, I'm all for that. This is the one, though, that might not pay off for these Pac-12 players. They want the league to distribute 50% of each sport's total conference revenue evenly among athletes in their respective sports. The only issue I see in that is I don't know if anybody would agree to 50%. I'm all for it again. I mean, 50-50. Give some back to the athletes, save half for the school. I think that's fair. I just don't know how much of a fight they're going to get over 50% of the revenue. I have no problem with it, but I have a hard time feeling as though the Pac-12 or anybody there in the NCAA is going to be okay with that. But then, you know what? That's all part of business, right? Going back and forth, you know, making a proposal, having a counterproposal, talking about all that stuff. So if these are the first demands that Pac-12 players are putting forward, you know, build off that, talk about that. If you need to make some changes, fine. But I think this is a great first step for Pac-12 athletes and for college sports in general. And now the Big Ten is following along with them, because football players from the Big Ten today, you know, right along in kind of that same sense with Pac-12 players, published a list of demands related to safety during the coronavirus pandemic, along with what they called the platforms for change. So some of those demands from the Big Ten athletes are, again, a third party approved by players to administer COVID testing and to enforce all COVID-19 health and safety health and safety standards. Which, again, if you're the NCAA, you've had time to think about this. Now, I don't know if, you know, they were just going to do, if the NCAA had somebody involved to administer COVID-19 testing, or if there was a plan in place for that at all. Obviously, they've been doing some testing. They've been finding, you know, positive tests in, you know, whether it was Clemson or Michigan State or Texas. So whatever that is, there was some protocol in place. But again, just like the Pac-12, obviously it hasn't been enough for players to feel totally safe because of it. So they're asking for a third party approved by players to administer those COVID-19 testing and to enforce all of the health and safety standards. So, excuse me. Sufficient penalties for non-compliance. And that, I think, is important, because I talked about that with the NFL. They just are going to leave it up to an arbitrator to come in and talk about and discuss the punishment for a player should they violate these team rules or league rules or whatever it might be in terms of these bubbles they're trying to create around each team. But there isn't any kind of hard line. So this saying there's going to be a sufficient penalty for non-compliance, that at least gives you a little more of an idea that they're going to take it more seriously. And if you decide to take a risk and go out there and you know, be at a party or be at a gathering or whatever it might be ready to possibly face some sufficient consequences, which gives me a little more hope for a college football season than an NFL season with, you know, the idea of how lax the NFL kind of seems right now in those punishments. But something else the Big Ten athletes are asking for. So mandate for athletic personnel to report suspected violations. Whistleblower protection for athletic personnel and college athletes reporting a suspected violation. Because you don't want anybody, you know, it's all about looking after each other. So if someone calls in a report that someone might be, you know, putting a you know, their health in jeopardy and then coming back to the team, that person is thinking the right way. Hey, you know what, man? You're being a little reckless, and I don't know if it's a good idea for you to come back around this team. But you want people to be able to do that. You don't want them to have to fear any kind of repercussion or any kind of revenge. So I think whistleblower protection, a good way to go. Automatic medical red shirt for any player who misses any competitions because of a positive test or mandatory quarantine because of contact tracing. Preserve athletic eligibility, scholarship, and roster spot for any player who opts out of athletic participation or is unable to play more than 40% of their scheduled season because of COVID-19 or season postponement slash cancellation. And then finally, coverage for all out-of-pocket medical expenses related to COVID-19, both short-term and long-term, incurred by active college athletes. So again, both Pac-12 and Big Ten looking for medical help beyond just your days of eligibility. And I think that's really important. And really, I think this is good for college and good for the future of college sports. For too long, these athletes at this level, this high of a level, have been labeled as amateurs and treated as such, and they are just not at their own. They're a much higher level than an amateur. They need to speak up and make it uncomfortable. If you remember back in 2014-15, Kane Coulter and Northwestern attempted to unionize, played by the rules, didn't try to step on anybody's shoes, you know, too much, and they were essentially stomped out and labeled as traitors. And now college sports has hopefully seen the light, and the Pac-12 and Big Ten can help create a better future and can put into place, you know, for all these outstanding college athletes that perform and risk injury for no pay as of right now, and hopefully these changes down the line can make college sports better for them and better for everybody involved. So hats off to the Pac-12, hats off to the Big Ten. We'll see if any other conferences follow suit with those two. But this is a great start, I think, for some positive change in the world of college athletics. And I'm going to take a break, but when I come back, we'll talk about The first FBS team to cancel their football season here on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM.
Is your technology infrastructure meeting the demands of your customers, your employees, you? How does your network scale to support your growth plans? With distribution hiding behind every corner, it's time you benefited from a network and security provider that will guide your organization through rapid technology change. Blackfoot, here to enable what's next. Visit blackfoot.com/SDWAN to learn more.
UConn has become the first FBS team to cancel their football season for, well, this season. UConn, fresh off their departure from the American Athletic Conference, were preparing for their first season as an independent. But, like I said, the first FBS team to cancel their football season. They had already had four games canceled. So, you know, as an independent team, unless you're Notre Dame and you're going to join a conference like they did join the ACC, if you have a third of your schedule canceled already, I mean, it seems like it's not a bad idea to cancel your season, especially with the fact that UConn football wasn't necessarily raking in the money there for the university. So it's not a surprise that they went ahead and canceled the season. And really, hats off to the coaching staff there, led by Randy Edsall. He, you know, in an interview said that they, as a team, coaches and players talked it out. The university and the coaches talked it out. So everybody was, you know, had their opinions taken into account. And, you know, the players said they fully supported the decision to not play. And when this was announced, you know, a lot of people, I think, turned to the fact that UConn was an independent team, and that makes it a little easier to say you're going to cancel your season. But again, Coach Edsall did not buy into that one bit. He said, you know, whether or not we're an independent school, we're a Power 5 school, or a Group of 5 school, you know, he would have made the same decision because these young men's lives are more important than money. And it's hard to argue that thought and that opinion because really, you know, at what point, I think Major League Baseball is kind of in that window. At what point, you know, how many people are you going to let test positive before you think it's time to call it a season? And, you know, for college football, they've already had a number of positive tests. They've had two or three whole teams have to go into, you know, quarantine and just try to stop this spread. So it's going to be an interesting proposition for everybody there. But sometimes it just takes one. So UConn becomes that first team. Will we see any other teams, whether independent or in a conference, follow suit? We'll have to wait and see. But that is the show. Thank you so much for tuning in. Hope you enjoyed it. I'll be back on the air tomorrow at 2 o'clock right here on ESPN Radio. So I will talk to you then. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday and enjoy the sports out there on TV. We'll talk tomorrow. Peace.